a slight change of topic here, but as I was setting up this video page for the syncbook.com, after I felt like I was pretty happy with it, I started to watch some of the films, and some of them I've seen before, some of them I hadn't. And I ended up switching out the one that I had for Jay Katza, and I put one in, and it ends. I mean, this is a long way of explaining how I just sort of saw this, but you know, the very end of 2001: A Space Odyssey, when you see the baby floating in space. Well, they at the end of this one Jake video, it's just he has it like fast forward, and I guess I was just in the right headspace to notice it. And I apologize if this is obvious to you guys, but when you see the space baby for the first time, that shot actually opens on the moon. It goes moon, and then it starts panning down, and then you see the Earth, and then you see the space baby. That's one shot. So it's like moon child.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I've tripped out on it, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that was, I mean, I had to come to that, like, other ways of, like, well, here's the thing. They find this signal on the moon that's leading them and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I realized that that was one shot
And you know,
where he, you know, Kubrick decides to.
when that shot begins, when you're watching it with The Shining, it's the moon arrives at the exact moment that Danny realizes how to escape the labyrinth. It's the first moment when he starts to retrace his steps and go in the opposite direction.
In
So,
reverse.
yeah.
Yep. So there you have it. That's the dark side. It's crazy.
Pretty
And
beautiful,
so, and
well,
then,
yeah.
and also, you're like, there's, you can watch Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite with Pink Floyd's Metal with the volume up on Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, and it sounds awesome. And the way that that album ends, it has like a theremin. It has like the, like, it's incredible when you watch it with the CD of Echoes, because the CD literally clicks off. If you start the album at the moment that the recording of Floyd says its origin and purpose still a total mystery, and you start it right after he says mystery, then the song literally ends at the moment that it pops up, written and directed by Stanley Kubrick. And but when the baby is there, the sound that the fucking album is making is just, it's like, woo, like it has this like thing going on. But
It's the Magical Mystery Tour.
I love that it's like, and then you have emerging from that, you have the Spake Zarathustra, and the rest of the end of that film is just like very ambient with the Strauss. It's Strauss. It's the really, you know, obviously it's like you have alien noises, supposedly different kinds of weird things going on. But then it's really fascinating then that you have at the end of ET, you have the drums from Thus Spake Zarathustra as the rainbow streaks across the sky when the ship takes off. You guys knew that? You know what I'm talking about?
It
Say
escapes
that
my
again.
memory, but I believe you.
Steven Spielberg literally gives a sync wink to,
Oh, end of ET.
yeah, at the end of ET.
Missed that, yeah.
And it's really interesting, like the levels of what's being communicated there. I mean, it wasn't until Subliminal Synchrosphere, reading through his insights into Spielberg and Lucas, that I just had to realize, like, wow, there really is, like, it's not just like a nod, like, oh, I appreciate that director. It's the meaning of the synchronicity. He includes the meaning of the coincidence, makes it the synchronicity. It's there, and so I don't know. I find it really, really interesting.
And there's the idea that, I mean, maybe this is, I don't want to rehash stuff if this has been said before. In ET, you have the rabbits and the mushrooms, like when the UFO lands, right? What, but you see mushrooms and rabbits. I believe Kevin Halcott's gone into this, but this, of course, ties into the idea of is the monolith, it is the 2000 monolith, a psychedelic, for lack of a better term, going to the, like the Terrence McKenna type stoned ape thing. Jake even made a sync video where he shows, you guys familiar with like Bill Hicks stand-up comedy, and he does his whole shtick of the stoned ape theory of these primates finding the mushrooms, but his backdrop for his comedy set is the monolith.
You know why that is? Why he says that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's the monolith. He says yeah. it in interviews. He's like, that's why I'm wearing all black. He was
right, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So there's this, but just the mushroom monolith correlation. But I don't know. I've been like, I realized a few things lately that are really obvious. Like, are probably really obvious to a lot of people that probably don't watch movies to really see. But like, in one of these sync videos, I saw the end of the Truman Show, and I've seen the movie years ago. But okay, I haven't watched in a while. And the end of the Truman Show, when he's exiting the stage, the simulated film, essentially, he steps through this black door that looks like a monolith. And just, okay, so we have this idea of like it's taking you out of the something fake, but if we take that to the mushroom, this is where, Bill, you know, your idea of a true psychedelic experience is one that gives you a true Gnostic experience. What is the Gnostic experience? Realizing this is a simulation, or this is somehow not real, that there's something more than this.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't even know if it's fair to even say that that's a psychedelic experience. I think it's a psychedelic trigger, right? Anything can trigger gnosis.
Mm-hmm.
What triggered Saul's vision on the road to Damascus, you know? When he became Paul, which I've been lately connecting with Paul is dead, is that Saul becomes Paul, but then at a certain point, Paul, because it's this new identity, even that has to go. You can't just go from Saul to Paul and stay Paul. I don't know if that's necessarily in line with other people's thinkings, but and I think that's what Philip K. Dick was achieving, or that's what he was getting to at the end of his life in his letters, is when he had some distance between his Gnostic, he called meta-abstraction, and he was able to see it, at least at the end of his life, for what he thought it really was. He was kind of exiting the exegesis and coming to terms with it all, and then he has a stroke and dies. That might just be the formula in this universe. But I think McKenna...
It's funny you say that because I've... Oh, go ahead.
No. Keep going.
I just wanted to drop in there is that I had years ago, I had this thought, ever figured out sort of the quote-unquote meaning of life, you would die. Like, you would be done here.
Right?
Yeah, if you thought about, like, if you figured it out, you'd like a truck would come down the street and you get hit by a truck and like, boop, you're gone. And everyone else would be like, oh, man, that guy's dead. And it's like, well, sorry.
We're not that lucky, I don't think.
It's just funny you said that.
But like,
yeah, it's just funny that you said that and then it's like, then he had a stroke.
Yeah, yeah. It's there. You know the whole thing about the Xerox missive in Philip K. Dick's life? He had been having this fear that there would... Or he was imagining that there would be this page of text that if you read it, it would kill you. That whatever, you could condense everything into one page, and then if you read this page, at the end of the last word, you would die. And
if you were actually to pronounce it, they say you die. That's like the
Isn't that the movie The Ring? You watch the movie and then you die?
Yeah, yeah. Which is literally like a monolith, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a cassette tape in the film. But, you know, I'm just wondering if you did this on purpose, Bill, how you made the jump from... what were you saying? Because you took
the page. Yeah.
And then you went from that to Philip K. Dick. Did you do that because of Through a Glass Darkly? You don't... now we see but poor reflection as in a mirror. It's the what we see now is a dim image in a mirror. It's through a glass darkly, as Paul in the Bible in Corinthians.
Oh, and I didn't know that was Paul.
That's where they got the title, through a scanner darkly.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Paul.
I didn't know that was from Paul.
I thought that was, made that jump. That was kind of interesting.
My brain is smarter than I am, so well done, brain. Well done.
That's interesting. And then Paul, the film Paul, centers around a gray alien. So there you go.
But, you know, that just ties into the whole thing you guys were speaking about, how every end is a new beginning, and that that means every end is a new beginning. This idea of a vacation is, that's a fantasy, you know what I mean? Nothing ever rests. That's what makes meditation such a salvation, is it gives you the illusion of rest. It's this loophole in the universe that seemingly human beings have this knowledge of, but we don't even use it. We have the greatest technology the universe has to offer, but not, most of us never even tap into that shit. But, you know, I'm sure that could be argued a million different ways. But I think that, you know, there's life beyond the Gnostic experience. And I think where some concern happens is when what you do after that gnosis, right? My argument is that, you know, McKenna is a person, he seems like someone who truly had a Gnostic experience and spent the rest of his life educating people. That's the path he took with the time he had left, that he was going to talk about his weirdness and share it with people and field as many questions as possible. Other people seem to have this Gnostic experience and want to translate that as like a prison guard in the Black Iron Prison, by being famous or being wealthy, or translating it in that, like, they have the power now and they can choose whatever role they want in the Black Iron Prison complex. And I don't think it really works that way. And I think people naturally start to question, well, did they ever really have the Gnostic experience? Well, I think they did have the Gnostic experience, but this place is designed as a labyrinth so that you lose your way. And I think we see that happening more often than not, with a lot of our heroes.
Sure.
I think I'm starting to ramble here.
So the Gnostic experience, sometimes is a man running at you with an axe?
Absolutely, right? Especially if it's your father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, Robert Anton Wilson's term, the cosmic trigger, I mean, that book is just, it's a catalog of cosmic triggers. It's ways to trigger your mind. You know how the picture of the Milky Way, and, or when you're out in like a, I've never seen it myself, but like out in a pitch black desert, you can see the Milky Way in the sky, right? But yet you're in the thing that you're looking at.
Right.
That's a cosmic trigger. A Gnostic experience is a way to get outside of your mind, to see your mind, and then realize you're in the thing that you're observing. And,
exactly.
Right? Okay. So the problem is that, you know, like you said, there's the bright, shining side of that mind, which is all unicorns, rainbows, and hanging out and whatever the fuck you want it to be. But you need to take a 360-degree perspective of that experience. And trying to make sense of how dark the dark side can be, yeah, I don't know if you ever really, really ever bring that together. It might not even be designed that way. That might be what makes the dissolution of the Black Iron Prison a given.
Hmm.
It'll return, but the fact that it can end is that's what the salvation is. It's that quirk that makes it even possible for us to even be talking about this shit right now. I don't know. I think I'm rambling, but
no, you're not. I appreciate it. I mean, I keep thinking of just this one thing that kind of like I thought I had an idea of 2001: A Space Odyssey, and then it's pointed out the amount of reversals and mirrors throughout that film that are completely subliminal, but that every time it happens, there's a significance that indicates power struggle and power structure, and just how well that's done in the first place. But the meaning behind it, that basically being manipulated through mirrors, but the point being that you're in a film and you don't know that you're in a film, which is what becomes, I mean, that's being repeated throughout the thing, but that David Bowman knows he's in a movie, but he's being fooled, right? So like he's going back and forth with it. But when he's got that glass on the table at the end in Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, and it's in the middle of the table, and then just a second later, it switches angles, and he knocks over the glass, and the glass was then all of a sudden at the edge of the table, which before was in the middle, and then he just stares at it, and the meaning being that he's like, he was fooled by it. He's like, what just happened? And he's like, as much as he wants to assert that he is aware that he's existing in this thing, he still isn't able to, I mean, it's always one step ahead of him. And that's the point. And so Hal is, you know, he's able to defeat Hal, but then when he transcends, it's still going on. I don't know. That's one way to look at it. I could look at it 10 different ways. But
speaking of 10 different ways to look at something, I watched yesterday, David, your video where you take the end of The Shining and place The Doors, the end over it. What?
The waters of Skype are a little choppy right now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys find
Do you want to just try and restart this call? It sounds really bad right now.
Does
yeah.
it? Oh, that's not my experience, but okay.
Yeah, it's both David and Alan, both of you were breaking up. So I'm just going to hang up and call you right back, okay?
Cool.
All right.
That was it. I had this dream I was trying to kill you.
Well, that's...
You know what that means, don't you?
It means that...
I'm going to have to kill you.
Jeez, I'm looking for another interpretation.
You better find one quick.
Why don't you just beat the crap out of me and we call it a day?
All right.
Ben, I have dreams all the time where I'm trying to kill you.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think what's important is not to be uncomfortable with those dreams, just sort of, and just enjoy them for what they are.
Jeez, but that's an awfully bad dream to have about your own father.
Was there something in the dream that was uncomfortable for you to see or to feel?
Dad, punch out, will you? Get off the therapy for 2 seconds and talk to me like a man.
You know what the most obvious interpretation of that dream is?
What's that?
You don't like me that much.
I guess you can.
But I'm not willing to even consider that one. I'm going to go with the more traditional interpretation, which is that you really don't like your mother.
Yeah, right.
In your dreams, how do you kill me?
I hire an assassin.
Oh, you're such a coward, Ben.
This guy was good, though. Total pro.
You know how you die in my dream?
Yeah.
Lethal injection.
Did I inject myself, or did you?
No, I injected you.
Do it.
I told you it was a polio vaccine.
How old was I when you tried to kill me?
First time?
Yeah.
10. And then every year from then on.
You know what? I cannot wait to go to bed now and think of a new way to kill you.
Let's race.
All right.
Guess what?
Yeah.
I feel closer to you somehow.
You know what? I feel the same way.
And I'm so glad that we can have these kind of frank conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I never realized how much talking about killing you would make me feel so much better about my life.
And the same goes for me in double.
Yeah, well, I double more than you because I'm better.
Yeah.
Just sleep with one eye open. That's all I'm saying, Dad.
Watch your back, Ben.
Yeah, you watch yourself.
Good night.
So I watched your Shining, end of The Shining with The Doors, the end over it. Mm-hmm. And that was powerful, man. Like, there were points in there where I was like, started laughing, but like a true, like hysterical laughing, like not like really like a loud and heavy belly laugh, but the laugh of like, oh my God. Like, you know, like when your body doesn't even know how to express what it's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You just sort of that laugh, that uncontrolled, like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Totally.
And parts were like, but it was because it put this. So the whole Oedipal angle of The Shining, we've discussed this, but something about that music just brought it home so heavy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've looked at The Shining as there are elements where, you know, where when Jack's saying maybe Danny did it to himself. And, like, you know, there's the idea of, like, is Danny actually manipulating the events of The Shining? And that's one way to look at it, and I've looked at it that way, and it's just an interesting way of looking at it where, you know, he wants to get his father out of the picture so he can be with his mother. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, you know, Mark LaQuaire has said that the Dick Halloran is Jack's penis, which is an interesting way of looking at it. And
to say the least.
To say the least. And then, of course, Bill's Kubrick Transformer really brought home for me the idea that the elevator doors are the menstrual bleeding, which I've a theory I've heard, but it didn't really ring true to me until I watched the Kubrick Transformer. There's Bill, do you remember what the pairing is when the doors are bleeding, what you see in
Well,
the
when Wendy's running down the red hall and she turns the corner to see the doors one final time, right as they start to open is you get the first fully realized look at the space of the Star Child. So the doors are opening,
yes,
and the Star Child is floating above it as if it's about to be born,
yes,
in this bloodbath.
Yeah, exactly. So that really made that ring true for me of like, okay, I see that. And it's funny because, you know, it's like it's not watching it in the – just watching The Shining and reading only the context of The Shining, but it just sort of – it was an added layer for me that made that possibility that much louder for me.
So this is really interesting because – so the way that I got the exact timing – in which I start the end was from playing three albums before it, and that's just where it lands. And so the three albums are Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, with obviously Shine On You Crazy Diamond, but Shine On You Crazy Diamond. And then following that with the Doors, An American Prayer, which was made after Jim Morrison died, with recordings that he had recorded on December 8th, which was his birthday, and also the day John Lennon was killed, which is interesting because it's named after the John Lennon song, obviously, We All Shine On. But then I follow it with The Doors 13, which was their last album that they came out with, and it was the only, it was the compilation album. So they made no other compilation album while Jim Morrison was alive, meaning that this album was approved by Jim Morrison. 13 songs on each side of the wall. That's really interesting then. Wow. Okay. That's another thing to process. But I love how the first Doors album is the reversal of the Doors 13. So whereas the first Doors album is all in black and you see one of Jim Morrison's eyes and the rest of the Doors there, in this one, it's all bright. It's like bright blue. And you have Morrison seeing only one of his eyes and the rest of the Doors like walking away from him. And we know 13, death, the end, right? And then it's like, this is like, it feels as if he knew it was coming, right? I mean, and on the back of this album, it has the Doors surrounding a stone bust of Aleister Crowley. And so there's this whole weird thing going on there. But they never released this album digitally. There's only the LP. And so there's another version. I included for that video the version of that recording that does not include any of the Doors 13. But I went through and mimicked the exact timing of the record digitally to kind of show a little bit more of what leads to the end. So to playing the end on another version that I have on Vimeo. But
it's interesting how you got to that timing, but it just worked. Now, I have a question for you before we dissect this too much is, what version of the video did you like? Is that a rip from
DVD? I used the American video. It's 144 minutes, I think.
Because there were a few shots in there that I do not. Now, it's possible. I've seen The Shining a million fucking times. It's possible that I've just missed these things.
No. But they included the shots. The blue room with the dead people, that's not in other versions.
Well, the blue room with the dead people is in my version. But, like, when Jack turns on the lights in the labyrinth and then his first few steps outside, like, where you see, and you see Danny hiding behind the wildcat or whatever it's called, the
snowcat,
thank you. When you see Danny hiding behind the treads of the snowcat and then Jack turns on the lights inside the labyrinth, I've never seen that before.
Really?
Oh, really?
There's variations. I mean, I've tried it with other... I tried to show it to somebody and I downloaded a version that was like different than the American version. But this is, I think, the longest version.
Well, yeah, I'm saying there were more shots in here and it was just like it just opened up from like with the combination of seeing new footage that I had never seen before. And yep. It snowballed for me.
Totally.
So what I want to just quickly throw out here is the idea, and this is probably not – some of this is not new, but I just want to sort of lay out a complete combination of all these different thoughts, right? So you have the idea of why do parents sleep with their children, that Playgirl magazine, right? Mm-hmm. You have the idea that the hints that Jack is sexually abusing Danny. Mm-hmm. Well – so Tony, the little boy that lives in his mouth, is that not Jack's penis?
You mean Heath Ledger?
Right. So Tony in Imaginarium keeps swallowing the pipe.
Right.
Right. If you were, you know, Danny going down on Jack, you keep swallowing the pipe, and you call him Tony. He's the little boy that lives in your mouth. Like, yeah. How would you – I mean, this is a fucked up headspace to even get into, but, you know, if you were to convince a small child to suck your dick, what would you even say?
Right.
You know, like, is it a way that Jack would say, oh, this is your little brother, or what the fuck does he say? You know, but, like, something along the lines of, like, hey, can you put my little boy in your mouth or whatever? So
– right.
The idea that Tony is the little boy that lives in his mouth is Jack's penis. Now, then that combining that with the idea of is Danny manipulating the events of The Shining? Well, it's making me want to go back and watch the movie from.
Oh, sorry. We lost Alan. It looks like he's trying to reconnect right as we speak.
All right, yeah. I think it's because he was too onto something.
Yeah, it was.
The CIA had to stop him from dropping the true meaning of The Shining.
What he's describing, you know, is when I read all that theory in LeClaire's articles, it's really hard to go back and watch that movie.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, it's just...
Because it's disturbing or something?
It's really disturbing. I mean, it's just sort of... The way I look at it is, you know... When I saw the film the first time in the early 80s, it was kind of right around the time that America was dealing with its violence that was not being discussed. So rape, child molestation, spousal abuse, those kind of topics were really starting to become national topics. And it was... always known, I think. Obviously, people were victims and victimizers, but there was no public conversation of it. There was no conversation to let you know, could you identify a victim in a public place and offer them help? How could you get a victim to open up to somebody and feel safe? And it's really jarring to think that, you know, Kubrick in The Shining was holding the mirror up to America and showing them something that they weren't really ready to be open about.
Yeah.
And well, the fact that the incest article is in Playgirl magazine is even more of a punch to the gut, because it's like, you know, this is a conversation that's going to explode over the next 10 years, but you'll never guess where these conversations were being intelligently discussed in something that you would consider pornography.
Right.
And it really was for the articles on a certain level.
Isn't it like a total statement on Bernaysian application of psychology? I mean, that's what it seems to me to be all about, public relations. I mean, that's how I interpret it, that it's manipulation through subliminals. And so like, well, what if we did that with... Oh, we had him for it. Are you back?
I'm back.
Oh, nice. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. My internet keeps crapping out for some reason. Can you guys take that thought back just 1 minute? What were you saying about Bernays and the magazine cover?
I had just related that the theories that you were discussing about the clues of, you know, Tony being Jack's penis, and, you know, the little boy that lives in my mouth, when he gets scared, he runs into my stomach. I mean, that's pretty graphic and disgusting when you think of it through that lens. And LeClaire goes through that line of thinking in depthly in one of his great articles on The Shining. But I was saying that, you know, Kubrick is a genius, because that public conversation about American violence against itself and rape and child molestation and spousal abuse, you know, that was a conversation that really became public in the decade of the 80s. But he's showing, it's sort of like, in 10 years, you'll be able to see this clearly, you know?
Right.
But right now, you're like the nurse who's like, you know what? Everything's okay. Everything's okay. Let's just make sure everything's okay. Let's ignore the obvious things here and just say, you know what? This happens all the time. Let's just close our eyes to it. And that the one place in the movie where there's a publication discussing these issues, it's in a Playgirl magazine, which is a pornographic magazine. And it sort of is a punch to the gut to be like, you know, this conversation, it was started before it got to Oprah Winfrey, and it was in Playgirl magazine, you know, something that you were trying to get rid of, or something that you would try to censor.
Something you're ashamed to look at. You're ashamed to look at the truth, which the truth is the naked truth, right?
Yeah.
These magazines that feature nudity but would also feature a naked truth that you don't want to look at.
Yeah, perfectly said.
Well, so just to say is that, so like I said, a lot of this might not be new, and I said I want to incorporate LeClaire's theory into this is in a moment, but just to quickly say, so if Tony is Jack's dick, then you have the idea that perhaps – the idea of Danny kind of manipulating certain events within the movie as well could also ring true, but it's not really Danny who's doing it. It's Tony who's doing it, right? So, but again, acting as Jack's penis. Like the idea of, for example, there's the idea of who let Jack out of the cooler, right? When Wendy puts him in the storage case.
Yeah.
Who could have let him out? And of course, you know, we have the supernatural explanation, but I think we're all kind of skipping past that, right?
Right.
So would it be Danny or would it be Tony? And so just to say, to focus on that for 1 second, you have the idea that how does Wendy even close the damn thing? It's you're putting a peg into a hole. Right. What you hear when Jack gets let out is you hear that peg drop. Right. But it's a very phallic, a sexual image to put that peg inside that hole. Now, so you have Wendy putting the peg inside Jack's hole. Now she's got the fucking bat. She's got the penis, and then she ends up with the knife. So like, so Wendy's kind of claiming her phallus at this point. Now, if Halloran is Jack's dick, as LeClaire says, we have the idea that what is Jack doing, but he's almost raging against his inner beast, right? If this is the thing he can't control, you know, maybe Jack wants to be a, you know, doesn't want to fucking be abusing his child, but here he is doing so, and he has struggled against it. So what does he do? But when Dick Halloran walks in, he starts attacking his symbolic dick. Mm. And the next thing he's going after is to get Tony. Is he even going after Danny, or is he really going after Tony in this respect?
It's funny because all these things that you're saying relate, or I should say the other way around, the rest of the music sync with The Shining relates so directly. Like, there's when Jack looks in the or walks by the mirror and you see his face in the mirror, the Jim Morrison goes, "The moon is a dry blood beast," and you have like this whole thing of in Moonlight Drive, which I realized was about having sex with a woman who's menstruating. Let's swim to the moon. Let's climb through the tide, penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. Like, people don't want to look at the reality of what that is. And so when you're talking about the doors opening and the blood flowing out, if you look at that as menstruation. But then at the end of that song, he says, going down, baby's going to drown tonight. Going down, 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 way down, deep below. Children of the caves let their secret fires glow. And how in The Lords, I think it was, or one of Jim Morrison's other poems, he says, it is The Lords. He says, in the womb, we are blind cave fish. And you were mentioning that there's a link that happens with the Transformer where you have the Star Child being shown with the floodgates opening with all the pouring blood, and how if you look at it as, you know, a birthing, right? Well, what's being born is a new consciousness, perhaps, or what, however you want to take it. But that, you know, how it's being expressed. In other words, those are just a couple examples, but there's a ton of examples where, like, this is why I consider Morrison such a profound synchromystic, is because the relatability of the archetypes that he's presenting, he's literally saying, let's reinvent the gods, all the myths of the ages. The Shining is fucking perfect for that because it's basically a modern Greek tragedy.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I love that.
So, I just want to take this, if you guys don't mind, I want to take this a step further. So there's the idea of what does Wendy see when she shines? And this, I believe, has been gone over a few times, but the idea that when she sees the bear costume going down on the man, right? Is this mm-hmm. her sort of replaying out the things that she's blocked out? So here she's seeing the something going down on this other man. You know, who's in the bear costume? Is that Danny, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been discussed before. But then she also sees the butler, or, you know, the guy who says, "Great party, isn't it?" And he's got the split down his head. Uh-huh. Now, is this the idea that Jack also has two sides of him? So this would actually be an interesting fucking movie sync, is the album Quadrophenia by The Who. There's a song called Dr. Jimmy, and he sings, it's basically like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and he says, Dr. Jimmy and Mr. Jim, when I'm pilled, you don't notice him, he only comes out when I drink my gin. And it's the idea Jimmy, the main character, when Jimmy takes these pills, he's one personality, and when he gets drunk, he's another personality. So here, while Wendy's seeing all this, she sees the split man holding a drink saying, "Great party, isn't it?"
Right.
So you have, you know, the idea of, like, here's Jack when he's drinking and how his personality will change. So he also has a split just like, you know, Danny has
Danny, that's awesome.
And Tony.
I never saw it that way.
And then what else does she see? But when she sees the room full of dead people, it's like the party's over. Like, so here you have this.
Shit, you're breaking
party.
Up.
Jack gets drunk. And at this party, she sees Danny going down on him. And now the party's fucking over. You know, the party's dead. You know, your marriage is dead. Everything's fucking dead.
Right.
All the things that she sees, if you, looking at it through this angle, you can start to see how this is telling out a sort of story there. And that you still have this idea is that it's not as simple. It's not with Kubrick. It's never that simple. But you still have the Oedipal angle, which is, yes, all these things about Jack could be true, and yet Wendy's the one claiming, sort of now she's claiming the dick, and you see as soon as, you know, Danny kills his dad, he runs out and kisses his mom, and they go off together. I mean, a lot of this has been discussed before, but just trying to bring a bunch of this into one conversation if possible.
Right. Well, he's got the Peter Pan complex, right? Because it's Wendy. Wendy is a name made for Peter Pan. Danny has his labyrinth. It's Dan's labyrinth, right? So he's literally, you know, a version of Pan. And he's manipulating the one who wanders into Dan's labyrinth. You know, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely,
Yeah, and there's an interesting side with the fact that he's Apollo, which is the destroyer of Revelations. And then you have Jack is basically partaking in the Dionysian ritual.
And, yeah, the alcohol. He's the alcoholic.
Through his fantasy. And there is no alcohol because the whole point of the Dionysian trip is that it's not about the alcohol. Like, that's completely missing the point. Just like Tantra isn't about having sex, you know? It's like, it's about what's
behind the cosmic triggers.
The mechanism. Yeah, exactly.
This is what Bill was saying. It's not about the psychedelic. The psychedelic just shows you that it's there.
Right. And that's something that Vipassana showed me recently. I had a full psychedelic experience with no aid whatsoever. And it was truly a psychedelic experience. I mean, I was having visuals like I've never had them.
Get your cosmic triggers here. Cosmic triggers.
I'm thinking it could be really fun to watch The Shining with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. like, do a simultaneous thing. I want to work with overlay more, but it's kind of challenging to get that set up. I don't know. I could probably just do it with Adobe or something, but then I would like to be able to have a viewing option just so I could just do that and not necessarily be having to render and do all of that. But I would really like to watch that because I think it would be interesting. Because you have Halloran is in there with Jack once again. Yeah. Just, and then the fact that you have this Indian there on the scene, the Indian from Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, like that, I don't know. I see it as like, you know, that the whole thing is built on the Indian burial ground and just the Indian liberating himself from the hospital. It's just, it feels like there's a resonant thing happening there. And the fact of what One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came out of isn't just Ken Kesey's experience working at a mental hospital. It's also him being part of the Tavistock MK Ultra experimentation, which is where he was continuing to get all of his LSD that he was giving to the Merry Pranksters and beyond. And then, so I don't know. I feel like that's really, that is very potent connection there.
Well, sure. If you're especially when you mentioned the whole Peter Pan thing, because Wendy is the mother to all the lost boys.
Exactly.
So you have Wendy as mommy to the lost boys. So both Jack and Danny are the lost boys, but the Merry Pranksters are like the thieves in Sherwood Forest. You know, they're so you have the connection between Peter Pan and Robin Hood, which sort of both wear the similar green cap, and the idea of like being the sort of outcast living outside of civilization. you know, is there a difference between the Lost Boys and the Merry Men or the Merry Pranksters?
Yeah, and then Pan as well, because Pan is literally the all, but Pan is actually the undernetting of our, of like, he's the one holding together our fantasy. Our shared consensus projected fantasy is Pan's creation. So Pan is just like the Tibetan malevolent deity, right, that encompasses all of the experience. And so it's the same thing, like what Bill was saying about, you know, well, by extension, what you can take the monolith as, the Gnostic realization is that you're living in the thing that you're looking at. Like if you look up and you see the Milky Way and you realize that you're in the Milky Way, like that's part of it. And it's just that, like, you're watching 2001 and you see the sun at the beginning, and you realize that that's a projector behind you that you're looking upon, but you're looking at something being projected from the projector. So it's like that, but that whole realization is also the realization of Pan. So, and then that is also that we're caught up in Pan's labyrinth. So when Jack is looking down upon the labyrinth, he's kind of like taking on the role of this deity that's looking upon the thing that he's got everyone lost in. And so he looks down into the labyrinth, and then it zooms in and you see Wendy and Danny wandering around in this mind maze.
Yeah, but to say that that's Jack has put them in there, I think is another step. What if it's Jack having the Gnostic experience of, you know, there's the Jack could be some sort of bodhisattva, where Jack sort of realizes that we're all inside the maze, and by trying to, in a sense, liberate people from the maze of the Gnostic illusion. He's the one who can see that he's inside the Milky Way. He can see that he's inside the labyrinth. And with that vantage point, he's actually looking over the labyrinth. Now, in that sense, he becomes a distorted bodhisattva, where how do you liberate people from the illusion? Do you try and, you know, get them to realize what it is, or do you run around with a fucking axe?
Well, that kind of ties back to the whole Pac-Man thing with that, you know, Jack has this simulated Gnostic intelligence. He has an adult perspective, but he's just a little boy in the eyes of the universe playing a video game, you know?
Right.
He's standing on the shoulders of giants who have compressed and condensed all of this knowledge into art, an art that has come alive. I mean, a video game like Pac-Man is a work of art, but we lose sight of that over all the labels that you get thrown onto it. But, you know, for one coin, you rev up the engine of this condensation of human experience, you know what I mean? But to be able to throw a quarter in and manipulate it doesn't mean that you have any ownership in its the genesis of it, or any understanding of where this machine came from, or what this machine is actually reflecting.
Which would explain why when Jack goes back into the labyrinth at the end, he doesn't know how to get out.
No fucking clue. His son has been his son is on the ground floor of the universal experience. I mean, he's...
Yeah, it's the difference between the conceptual Gnostic experience and the embodied Gnostic experience.
Yes.
Danny's been in the labyrinth. Jack has seen it from above.
Yes.
Right. Also, just give people a background of why you're making this connection between Pac-Man and The Shining. They came out within one day of each other.
Yeah, 24 hours.
And so you have Pac-Man was originally called Puck-Man, which relates to Pan, and takes place within a labyrinth with ghosts, and The Shining is literally a labyrinth with ghosts. Just saying.
Yeah. No,
and
it's
when
freaky.
And in Pac-Man, you eat the power pellets, and suddenly you're transforming your landscape.
Well, the ghosts go from enemies to beautiful creatures that you can eat, and then before you know it, they flash back to ghosts that want to kill you. It's all
that's
too
as Gnostic
much.
An experience as I've ever had.
Walking.
Yes.
But I'll go back to something David said earlier, and I guess it's not really fair for the uninitiated, but the way he said, wow, I can just look at these images and I know exactly what the show is about.
Right.
Maybe that works on an unconscious level. I think it does. I think that when you see an episode and you see the image, if that triggers your brain and you get kind of turned on by that image, I think it says what it needs to say at a certain level. And as you're listening to it, that image starts to work its way, it starts to come alive in a certain sense. And it's working on a pretty high level, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes me now regret that. So, you know, I redid this image for episode 12,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like now that it seems like it almost more appropriate for today's episode.
Well, you could probably get away with that and not many people would notice, but it's a killer image.
Right. Just kind of swapped. Just change that number back.
Just change the number. It's weird in that always record room, man.
Yeah, these images here. You know what I thought was cool? Because you say the big C, and I use the Colorado State flag C, which obviously references The Shining, but you realize that's 1 week before the Aurora shootings.
Ooh.
So
what is it?
That episode, episode 12, I made it. I just this weekend I made a new image for episode 12. And if you can see it on your, if you want to look it up,
I'm going there right now.
Cool. So, but yeah, so like have Colorado comes into the news a week later.
Oh, no shit. Jesus.
Yeah. Dig it.
Wow, dude.
I love it. Yeah. Weird.
Well, like I said, so what do you think? Should I make this image today's image or just leave it like this? And because you guys, I don't think you and LeClaire discussed Pac-Man. I just thought like it was kind of a cool image. It kind of came to my mind of like, hey, here's Danny getting the ball rolled to him. And now just throw in some of the things. So you guys talk about mushrooms. You talk about love. You talk about 2000.
Everything's here. It's perfect. It's like you knew ahead of time where it was going. And you can't, like, go back in time and treat it from, like, you tried to go back in time, but really the present is the only thing existent with sync, so.